Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another live show. On today's episode, we are going to be discussing how Oklahoma City trading Lu Dort to the Atlanta Hawks potentially impacts the Lakers and their search for a wing slash forward, how it impacts the Western Conference, and what is the latest with the Jonathan Kuminga situation. But first, shout out to the chat, shout out to the late night gang. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. Let's get into it. So the news of the day is the Oklahoma City Thunder traded Lu Dort to the Atlanta Hawks. And here is the full trade per Shams. The Thunder traded Lu Dort to the Hawks in a three-team deal that sends 3 second-round picks to OKC. Zachary Richechet goes to Dallas, and Ryan Nemhard goes to Atlanta. So we have a lot of moving parts with this trade. OKC ends up salary dumping Lu Dort, as well as Aaron Wiggins and Isaiah Joe, all to Eastern Conference teams. They get a combined 7 second-round picks for those three players. But the most important thing for them was shedding that money. They saved about $224 million in luxury tax payments. And Sam Presti, in an interview today, acknowledged that this was a purely financial decision. This was not a, we don't think Lu Dort fits, or, you know, we're just trying to open up more flexibility for player X or player Y. It was like, no, we needed to get under the second apron, and we wanted to avoid the repeater tax, and did say that this will allow them in future seasons to spend more money and spend into the second apron. But for this season in particular, they decided with ownership that it was best to get under the second apron. This was not a surprise necessarily. There had been some speculation that maybe OKC was comfortable being a little bit above the second apron, and they had already shed some salary with Wiggins and Joe and restructuring the contract with Kenrich Williams. But clearly, this was the final domino that they felt they needed to do in terms of getting under the second apron, and they lose one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. I would argue if any team is equipped to lose a starter and replace them, it's OKC. I think Kayson Wallace, Alex Caruso, and AJ Mitchell are all straight up just better than Lu Dort. And I think Oklahoma City felt that way as well, based on who would often close games and looking at the minutes distribution. He was often more of like a placeholder stand-in starter who was more like the 8th, 9th, 10th guy, especially as the playoffs wore on. Like, he was really rough this postseason, particularly in that San Antonio series, whereas the aforementioned guys, AJ Mitchell was banged up toward the end of the season, or the end of the postseason. But I'll throw AJ in there, but, you know, Kayson Wallace and Alex Caruso are just straight up better players than Lu Dort. They have far more offensive utility, and I actually think more defensive versatility. So in a weird way, I think OKC is clearly, they lost the depth that made them special. They're still a deep team, but they don't have that, like, Aaron Wiggins is their 13th man or you know, whatever. So that's going to impact them in the regular season. I could see, especially if this J-Dub hamstring stuff continues to linger and or they just have continued bad injury luck, this could impact their success in the regular season. Actually, they come playoff time, just playing better players instead of Lu Dort, and whether it's starting Kayson Wallace, who I think will probably start, or AJ Mitchell, then having the other one in a more prominent role, having the same, if not slightly more, Caruso, having more Jared McCain. Actually, this is going to dramatically impact OKC's offense, including theoretically having a healthier J-Dub. But I think defensively, they are basically going to be at the same level. So I will say I'm lower on Lu Dort than probably consensus. I think he was a borderline unplayable offensive player, and to me, clearly more of a bench level guy than a starting level guy. Like, his defense is all defense. It's not really a knock on his defense. It's just, I think he is in some ways like kind of similar to Vando, just with a more reliable 3-point shot. But it's like, if he's not making threes, he's not breaking down the defense. He's not getting out in transition. He's not a connective passer offensively. He's not cutting. He'll occasionally get some offensive rebounds. But so I actually think, in a weird way, when OKC looked at their best, like their adjustment was often take Lu Dort out of the lineup. And I think the impact in the playoffs will be lesser, and if not potentially even a higher ceiling for them, in my opinion, just because I think he sometimes played at the expense of better players in terms of Kayson Wallace and AJ Mitchell, et cetera. Whereas now I think in the regular season, certainly it's going to impact them. And I still think they're going to be a 61 team. I'm seeing some people say they're now going to be under 60. Like, this team was the most injured playoff team in the West and they still won 64 games. So barring something like that, I think they'll be a 60 plus win team, but certainly there's less margin for error in the regular season. But I do think a higher upside in the playoffs, in like an addition by subtraction way of just, I think they had better perimeter options who were kind of held back because of Lu Dort, but we'll see if that plays out. I could be wrong, and that's something we just won't know until next April and May and whatnot. But in terms of how this impacts the Lakers, I think the big thing now is, so clearly there's a wing off the market, right? Like, Lu Dort was technically available. I don't think the Thunder were ever going to trade him to the Lakers, but he was technically out there, right? And so that player is now off the market. But I would also say he's now off the market, I think, next summer. If you look at the Reese Shea had become a sunk cost for Atlanta, but you still ended up giving up the former number one pick from not too long ago. And if you're Atlanta, I think optically you're going to prioritize keeping Lu Dort. Now, maybe he just doesn't fit, or I think it's a really interesting question of whether he's going to start or come off the bench. I would actually pencil him in probably more as a bench player right now compared to starting, just because I don't know how much you could actually play him and Dyson Daniels together based on their combined offensive limitations. I think it's more of a continuity thing where you have one of those guys on the floor at all times, but I don't know how much you could actually play both of those guys together. So I view Dyson as just a better player. He's going to start over Dort, and you're not exactly the same positions, but just that general archetype of defensive stopper with offensive questions. I could see Lu Dort coming off the bench and Dyson continuing to start there. So there's an element here. Maybe he just doesn't fit, and maybe he is more available next summer. But if the Lakers had circled him as a guy to potentially use the non-taxpayer mid-level exception on next summer, if they don't make a bigger move this summer and spend into some of that space, I think Lu Dort is now off the table and will likely be staying in Atlanta. So that takes off a wing now and in the future. As for Atlanta, Atlanta was already with 15 guys under contract with guaranteed contracts. They're now at 16. And so this to me signals that there'd been a little bit of buzz of, what if Atlanta just keeps Kuminga? What if they don't like some of the sign and trade options and they just say, hey, if we could get this dude at a discount, why don't we just keep him or run it back for like a 1 year deal or something? And that's now, I think, off the table. They have 16 players under contract, not factoring in Kuminga. So if you add in Kuminga, you're going to have to clear some space. You already were going to have to clear a spot. Now you have to clear a couple spots to fit Kuminga into that. So right now, Atlanta is facing either they sign and trade Kuminga somewhere, or they rescind his rights and let him walk, but now you're not getting anything for that asset. So that's something that Atlanta has to weigh in terms of how they view Kuminga and the potential return. And would they trade him to the Lakers, and would they potentially even lower the price now just based on they can't really use the leverage against the Lakers of, well, hey, like, I mean, the only leverage they have is that they have his rights and can facilitate a sign and trade elsewhere, but they can't be like, hey, well, we might keep this guy. We view him as a part of our future. Like, that doesn't really ring as true right now. So I think that's a thing that's a positive for the Lakers kind of coming out of this, is this does put Atlanta in a position where they probably have to sign and trade him if they want to get anything. I mean, that's the only way they could get something back for him. But I think they could have potentially retained the asset and in the future tried to flip him. I think that's off the table. So it's now just, do you want to trade him in a sign and trade and get something back for him? Or do you just let him walk and then he has to sign whatever contract he can get in free agency, which right now is not looking like much. And then Dallas, of note, they remain at 15 players, but they add another young big wing to this front court that they have been revamping over the past year or so. And Now, to compare Zachary Risacher to PJ Washington, I think there is a giant gap between the two players, especially looking at the draft cachet that Risacher had as a former number one pick and what he ultimately was traded for. There's a bit of a gap there, right? But with Dallas being on a different timeline now, and Dallas looking at guys more in their early to mid 20s, and that really being the shift here with some of their roster moves and some of their decisions, I think this continues to confirm that Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington are available and just don't fit the timeline with Dallas. So it doesn't mean they're going to just give them up, right? Like that there's, because they're available or because they're looking to trade them, doesn't mean they're just going to trade them for anything. And they have been asking for a first round pick. No one has met that demanding price yet, that ask yet. But I think this does nudge. I mean, it seemingly has nudged Daniel Gafford a little bit more out there where that's been the buzz the last couple of days. But I read is also PJ Washington is now more gettable. Now, there's a whole different question entirely of, are they willing to trade with the Lakers optically with the PJ situation? And are they willing to come down from the price of asking for a first? Because the Lakers can't offer that, right? Like, that's been the thing we've been discussing when we talk about the Lakers trading for PJ. Then there's also the fact of, does LA want that contract? And how do they view PJ fitting in? And how do they view him long term? But I think the big takeaway for me from today's trade and the team specifically involved and just the roster shakeup is Atlanta added another wing and Dallas added another wing. So to me, that means that to some degree, I don't know to what degree, but to some degree, I think LA is in a better position now to land Jonathan Kuminga or PJ Washington than they were as recently as this morning prior to the trade. Like, whatever percent that was at previously, I think has increased by some measure. I'm not quite sure to what. I mean, I would say already I felt the Lakers were in the prime position to land Jonathan Kuminga if Atlanta was willing to play ball. This to me just continues to enforce that, because again, Atlanta is not going to be keeping Kuminga. So it just makes sense for them to try to trade him somewhere. And the funny thing within this that I feel like people aren't really talking about is Cleveland is looming as this threat or supposed threat for Jonathan Kuminga, but Cleveland can't acquire Jonathan Kuminga in a sign and trade right now, because as long as James Harden's cap hold is on their cap sheet, they're past the second apron. Now, assuming that he takes a discount, which is why that they're working that out right now and trying to figure out what that number is going to be and if LeBron potentially fits into things. But assuming that Harden takes some form of a discount, which I think is going to happen, even then, he's got to take a pretty big discount for them to, I think anything above $25 million, they're past the first apron. And realistically, I think it's probably going to be above there. So like them going above the first apron, they can't acquire a sign and trade player. You get hard capped at the first apron. So unless they're punting on James Harden and backing out of that handshake deal of them keeping him and renegotiating that contract for Jonathan Kuminga, it gets pretty tricky there. Now, technically, they could. It just depends on where that number comes in, because I've seen like it floated, well, max truce for Jonathan Kuminga, but like that's not how this works. If you are acquiring a player via sign and trade, you get hard capped at the first apron. You can't go past that $209 million. I believe Cleveland right now with the active salary is at around 195, 196, somewhere in that range. So Cleveland can't just trade for Jonathan Kuminga. The one thing they can do is sign him with the roughly $6.1 million taxpayer mid-level exception, which, okay, I guess you could do that, but that's less than the Lakers were offering Kuminga in terms of that two-year $20 million deal. And I just don't see Jonathan Kuminga accepting a $6 million AAV deal. So I'm not saying it's impossible for him to land in Cleveland. There's certainly avenues, and it really depends where that Harden contract comes up comes in. But if they don't land, if LeBron goes elsewhere, and there's been a lot of Miami buzz the last couple of days, if he goes to Miami and Cleveland strikes out on LeBron, it feels like they're just going to re-sign James Harden, and then I think they'll be at 12 or 13 players, and then you got to fill out the roster up to 14. But it feels like they'll just do some minimum signings, and maybe depending on Harden's discount, you could argue that they could fit Kuminga with the $6 million under there. But does Kuminga want to sign for $6 million? Like, all the sides have not been pointing toward Kuminga signing for $6 million. So I think it's, if Cleveland truly is the primary threat for Kuminga, I think the Lakers in the driver's seat, in my opinion. The big thing right now for the Lakers is the issue that I think is going to be the thing that they have to find a way to overcome. And we will transition now to a different problem here, is with Atlanta having 16 players, they were already at 15 prior to this trade, and it was going to be difficult to make this work. But with Atlanta being at 16 guys, if the Lakers are sending out, I think realistically, one to two guys, I think it's probably going to be Dalton and Hardy to cross that $8.8 million dollar threshold, which we've talked about before. You go above 8.8, you could take back up to $9.1 million back in a trade. If you're between 8.8 and 29 million, if you're below 8.8, then you could take back double the amount that you're sending out, plus $250,000. But I think for what Kuminga is going to want, it's probably going to have to be that second bucket. Maybe if the Lakers can get it down to 12, 13, you could just send out one guy, Hardy, and you reroute him elsewhere. But I think the big challenge for the Lakers right now is going to be they have to reroute potentially two players. And I think trickier than it sounds. It might have to be a situation where you're rerouting one guy to one team and one guy to another team, and it's a four-team trade. But I think the aftermath of all this is, on the one hand, like, Kuminga, I don't think, is going to be staying in Atlanta now, and whatever small percentage chance that was at is now out the window. But the flip side is Atlanta now has 16 guaranteed contracts, so teams can carry up to 20 throughout the offseason, but you have to get back down to 15 by the start of the season. And it could be as simple as waiving some guys and just having some of that dead money on your cap sheet. And if it is a one-year situation with a Dalton Connect, with a Jaden Hardy, okay, you can eat that money for a year and it's not that big of a deal, but you're going to want some draft capital for that. So I think it just, whatever the potential framework is, whether the Lakers are rerouting these guys to other teams or it's a direct deal with the Hawks, it's going to require additional draft capital over, in addition to the actual framework of the trade. So for example, if the sides agree, hey, 2 seconds for Jonathan Kuminga, okay, well, that direct value of Atlanta getting 2 seconds for Jonathan Kuminga, okay. But if you're adding in a third team, you're probably going to have to send something to them to entice them. Or if it's Atlanta directly and they're just going to eat the two contracts, I have to see, double check right now. They're actually at 260. So I think are they a second apron? There's no way. This is probably with some of the math ain't mathing to me here, but the SpotTrack has them as 260 million in active cap, which I don't think is right. Maybe that's before some of these trades have got, whatever. So regardless, Atlanta, I think it's going to be tricky for LA to find that third team, because I don't think Jaden Hardy is a guy who, like, I'm sure some team would be willing to take him, but I don't think there's like this giant market for Jaden Hardy. We already saw in the DeAndre Ayton trade, the Lakers were able to extract 2 second round picks with Hardy for DeAndre Ayton. So I think Hardy is a guy you're going to have to attach a second round pick or something to, and the Lakers have the 3 seconds plus the swap. And then Dalton's maybe a guy you could find someone to take a swing on with just what he flashed his rookie year. But I don't even think that's a guarantee necessarily. So I guess this could be a situation where the Lakers do have to do something like, all right, 1 to 2 seconds for Kuminga, then a second with Dalton or a second with Hardy, or maybe if you could package them together to the same place, like 1 second for them. But I think it's going to require whatever's the primary capital going in the Kuminga trade to get off of those guys is going to require at least one more second. That's before we even mentioned like Jared Vanderbilt. I think that ship has sailed. I would be pretty surprised at this point if the Lakers are able to move him. Teams have made their moves. They're not looking to add that $12.5 million over the AAV over the next couple of years. I think that's going to be a really difficult contract to trade. So I don't think it's entirely off the table, but it does seem like if the Lakers are making one of these cost-cutting salary dump type moves, it's far more likely it's a DK or a Hardy compared to Vando. I think Vando, as of right now, it's looking more likely he's on the roster. Like I just don't. I told you guys multiple times on here, the whole Vando to the Hawks thing never passed the smell test for me, especially with just one swap being involved in there. That to me just was not going to be enough. If the market has been claiming like teams want first for Vando, a swap is not a first. So you're going to need to throw more in there. So I think if the Lakers are somehow attaching Vando in some sort of trade, and I don't think it would be to the Hawks because he does have the 2 years, it would have to be somewhere else. Like that alone, I think, is going to cost at least a couple of those assets. If not, you know, like 2 seconds, you know, I'd be surprised if 2 seconds even got it done, but like, you would theoretically be doing 1 to 2 assets for Kuminga, then at least two assets to get off Vando. So you're emptying the clip at that point with all of your draft capital. But that, I think, is going to be the key thing here for LA. Whether they clear a spot for a Matisse Thybul or they clear a spot for a Kuminga, it's likely going to be it's not going to be the direct Kuminga trade where they do it. I think they're going to have to reroute these guys now, and that's just a new challenge within all this. And then looking at the Dallas side, I think if the Lakers are pursuing PJ Washington, which remains a question mark, I still have not gotten great insight in that. Obviously, there's the report from Kobe Price that the Lakers weren't interested in that. I have argued, I think that is posturing, and I think it's the Lakers playing hardball, but it seems to be, as of right now, that they don't like love that contract and might not actually be interested in it. But look at the Lu Dort trade that does somewhat set the market. I've made the point that just because player X goes for X doesn't mean player Y is also going to go for X. Just two different situations between PJ Washington and Lu Dort. I would also argue that a huge component here is that I don't think OKC necessarily sold Dort at the top of his value or for the most they could get. It was a situation where OKC needed to trade Lu Dort to get under the second apron, and they were willing to sell him at a relative loss in terms of just, we need to get off this and we're going to get 3 seconds. All right. It's not, I'm sure they would have loved to have gotten a first or something like that for him, but that just wasn't what was realistic. So especially with factoring in he's expiring, you're going to have to figure out what's an extension, whatever, or re-signing. So I would just note that I think the differences between PJ Washington and Lu Dort, I would say like it just talking to people, I think PJ Washington is perceived to be the better player and has more overall value, but he's also locked up for 4 years. And on top of that, Dallas is not in a position where they need to trade PJ Washington. OKC, due to financial circumstances, was in a position where they needed to trade Lu Dort. So there's like a desperation factor here where if OKC scours the market and the most they could get is 3 seconds, that's just what they have to do. Dallas doesn't have to do that. So I think that's a big distinction here between the potential trade framework for PJ Washington versus Lu Dort is Dallas can say, hey, the Lakers are offering 3 seconds. We think PJ Washington's better than that. We don't think that's, like, we got him for 4 more years. We don't have to trade him now. We can wait until maybe he has like a bounce back offensive season and you know, Kyrie returns and he makes him look better. And all of a sudden come trade deadline, you could trade PJ Washington for more. So I think that's one thing to keep in mind here is that just because I saw, I got asked this on X and I saw people talking about, well, if Lu Dort goes for 3 seconds, that automatically means 3 seconds for PJ is a, that's a given now. Right. And I would just say that's not necessarily the case. Like, yes, they have not been able to extract the first round pick for him. So it does seem like more realistically, he's going to be like a 2 or 3 second round pick type guy. But that doesn't mean just because the market is dictating that's his value doesn't mean that Dallas has to accept that that's his value and trade him right now. Dallas can just go into the season. They're not above 16 players. They're at 15. So they're fine right now. And so I think there is a potential pathway here where Dallas is like, we don't like the current offers. The Lakers aren't offering enough. Team X isn't offering enough. Team Y is not offering enough. We don't like the offers. So we're just going to go into the season and hope that PJ Washington stays healthy, has a bounce back offensive season, and then we could trade him at a high point.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So in summation here, I would say that I do think the Lakers are in a great position to land Jonathan Kuminga, be it by sign and trade or potentially Atlanta rescinding the rights. Now, at that point, LA would obviously have to clear a roster spot, get off some money, and then sign Kuminga. And that would, it would be a vet minimum, but I'm just wondering if I'm him. I mean, at that point, I am probably favoring Cleveland or some of these teams that could offer the taxpayer and trying to get as much money as possible, even if it's a one-year situation. So that would be a little trickier for the Lakers. But what the Lakers can offer is a competitive situation where you could be one of the top teams in the West and you could start. Even if he ends up only signing a one-year vet minimum deal, he can start and rehab his value in that role compared to going elsewhere and maybe being a bench player or not having the same spotlight, maybe not having as much success depending on the team or the situation. So that I think LA is in a better position as of right now, more so via sign and trade than, you know, signing him outright. But the challenge will be, how do they find this team out there to take on Delta Connect and or Jaden Hardy? Because I don't think it's going to be the Hawks. And if we look at this in terms of the teams with the least cap allocated right now, looking at this on a spot track. So you have the Bulls, who are roughly, so all these teams are basically at the cap. Brooklyn, Memphis, and Chicago are all right under it. But looking at the players that they have on the active roster, Chicago has 14. So they could take back an additional one. They can't take back two. And again, like technically they can, but you got to sweeten the pot for them to want to take on a couple guys. Memphis is at 19. They're one away from the offseason maximum, and they're going to have to clear some guys off their cap sheet. Brooklyn's at 14. Charlotte's at 18. Detroit and Utah are both at 15. You have the Lakers at 14. This is not factoring in the Zaire Williams signing, which was made official earlier today. So now the Lakers are at 15. You have Milwaukee at 17. And then starting with Toronto, you go above the first apron. So I think if the Lakers trade, dump one or two of those guys, it's going to be some team in this mix. And we talked about this last stream. Chicago, Memphis, Brooklyn, Charlotte has a big trade exception. Detroit has Durin that they're going to be focusing on. I don't see them. Utah, I don't see taking on the Lakers guys. And then you have Milwaukee, although they're technically already at 17, which is a pretty high number. I think it's one of those five teams: Chicago, Memphis, Brooklyn, Charlotte, Milwaukee, and technically none of them can just take on two guys. This isn't a situation where they have 12 guys, 13 guys under contract. They're all at 14 plus guys. And so it's just going to be fascinating to see how the Lakers can navigate that of, you know, is it Chicago and Brooklyn and you send one of Hardy or DK to one, the other one to the other one, and maybe you attach a second round pick and it's like, all right, Dalton in a second, Hardy in a second, and then a second and a swap for Kuminga, something like that, or a second for Kuminga. Maybe you're able to haggle it with Atlanta where you're like, we're not giving up the swap for Kuminga, but we'll send you a second. You get a free second round pick for just sending us the player. It's really, and you get a trade exception off that, I believe, although I'm not quite sure off the top of my head, but I think they might get a trade exception off that. So if you're out late, it's like, would you just take a free second round pick for helping facilitate Jonathan Kuminga to the Lakers? Like, I think that's a no brainer. But that might be kind of how this plays out, is I think it's going to be at least a third team, if not potentially a fourth team. You're going to have to reroute Dalton and Hardy. And then if you're the Lakers, in that case, you could sign Kuminga to upwards of a $19 million contract starting out. I don't think they're going to want to go that high. I feel like they should be able to keep it in the mid-teens, and if not potentially even squeeze him down to like 12, 13, because right now they have some real leverage with that. But that is how I see this playing out if it does end up happening. If it doesn't end up happening, then the Lakers are going to have to pivot to... I still think they should be dumping some guys at the back end of the roster. We talked about it when we did the depth chart episode, that spots like for me 12 to 15, there's some shakiness there. If you, I have it as Looney, Bronny, Hardy, and Dalton, roughly in that order, but you could debate whatever order. I think Looney's probably 12, and then the other three guys are 13, 14, 15. Those four, I think you could upgrade one or two of those spots. And like Looney's obviously a new signing, so Looney you put to the side. Then it's Bronny, Hardy, Dalton. I would like to upgrade two of those three spots. I think the two most realistic are Dalton and Hardy. Obviously, there's still the looming, does Bronny potentially go where LeBron goes, as has been reported, and we talked about it on here. I think the Lakers are going to demand a real asset, and we'll see if whichever team LeBron goes to is willing to pay that asset. But if not, I think the Lakers are just going to keep Bronny and would prefer to reroute one of these other guys instead. So that, and also there's a financial component here where Dalton's making double the amount of money as Bronny and Hardy's making three times as much as Bronny. So even if you dump Bronny, you're not creating, I mean, you could technically dump him and create the roster spot, which maybe the most straightforward path here is they really want Matisse Thybulle and they're like, hey, whichever team LeBron goes to, here's Bronny, give us a second or something. And then they go and get Matisse Thybulle. Like it can work. That might be the most straightforward way where you don't have to attach anything to Bronny. You're actually probably getting something for Bronny and maybe that works. But that's not like in terms of the sign and trade possibility with Kuminga or trading for PJ Washington, Bronny being in the trade or being rerouted in terms of the financial bucket, he's making such little money, you know, compared to the other two guys that it just makes far more sense. Like even having Bronny and Hardy, you don't get into the second bucket, and the Lakers would need to get to the second bucket to acquire PJ Washington. So realistically, I think whether if they're acquiring Washington or Kuminga via trade, it has to be Hardy and Connect from a financial component, to say nothing of like how they actually value these guys. So just wanted to talk through that. With all that said, I'm going to wrap here. Appreciate you guys for rocking with me. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back tomorrow morning with Pete Zayas on Lakers Collective. No Trevor this week. He's out of town. Much deserved time off, vacation. We will be going at 12 tomorrow. Then we'll be going at 11 on Wednesday. Then I'm going out of town, so I'll miss part of the following week. And then I'll be back later in the week. But shout out to the Late Night Gang. Shout out to the chat. Appreciate you all. And I will talk to you all tomorrow.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.